Chapter 3. At Last. A week prior, up in the mountain. Still early in the day, before Lucy Featherbright opened the front door of her cozy farmhouse, even before she had folded back her cozy goose down quilt, she just plain smiled for the joy of being alive. The beginnings of the glimmer of light across the serene mountain lake peeped in her open window. After finding and dressing in her not quite fresh garments, and then stuffing a piece of cheese and a not quite fresh roll into her pants pocket, she turned to leave the small hut. Her amber eyes twinkled as she swung the heavy door open and leaped down the two steps. Novian Dawn was usually a spectacular showy event in the cool autumn mornings here in the backwood forest of Jade Mountains. When the first rays popped over the peaks behind the little cabin nestled above the hamlet, Lucy watched the morning tree shadow shorten and nod on her dried-out roll and crumbly cheese. Warmth finally started to soak into her chilled skin as she watched the day open before her. The light brought some thin autumn coziness with it. She turned her face to the light, soaking up all the sunshine she could. Already the light was not as strong as it had been in the summer, and Lucy was aware that the cold would soon be upon them soon enough. Sighing, she finished the last bite and then turned to focus on the covered wagon in front of her cottage that had been abandoned half unloaded in the exhaustion-fueled arrival. Last night, she had let Torgon's furry companion off its leash after she had finished maneuvering the little wagon up the steep mountain path. The cat quickly and silently disappeared into the nearby forest. Lucy was used to this. Giddy had done so every time she had arrived at the farm. Now, upon waking, she realized her twin brother's large snowy lynx had not yet returned from its nightly stalking in the woods. "Huh," she snorted to herself. "Go figure." A pry bar leaned nearby, and soon she started prying at the closest barrel and scooped a couple of salted fish out when it opened, their red and blue colors sparkling in the early morning light. Hoping to entice the beloved pet out of the nearby trees, she sang out, "Here, kitty, kitty!" Shaking the wet and iridescent fish she had picked out for the large snowy white lynx. Early autumn had not completely changed Kitty's coat to the more subtle colors of winter, and some of the dark streaks were still visible in her sleek coat. It made Kitty nearly invisible in the wild. In the past, when Torgon had left Kitty with Lucy, the suspicious feline often liked to watch the lake below from just past the edge of the tree line near the cliff. But this morning, Kitty was not there, nor at her doorstep like Lucy expected, nor at the edge of the forest in the tree line. Kitty was not in the corral annoying the new colt, nor the orchard, nor the garden. When Oscar arrived, she made him help her search instead of working with the animals. Not even her hired hand had seen the wildcat. Kitty was not at the little farm at all. There were many places that Kitty could be found, but she could also disappear at will, it seemed. So Lucy shrugged and set the fishes near the front door where Kitty could find them when she came back from whatever she was doing. Then she kept unpacking from her recent trip to Jade Valley. The Cabalus had caused quite a stir there, and Lucy was still disappointed that the artifact she hunted had disappeared again with barely a whisper. Well, at least Phlebas was working his way through the tomes on the subject back in central Brittany. Lucy was certain Phlebas would find the trail eventually. He was thorough and motivated. The little-known magic artifact book appeared to fascinate him too. She didn't much notice the passage of time until the sun dipped behind the mountain. The air suddenly chilled and Lucy, chopping wood, shivered. She decided she would finish her task upon the morrow. Those abandoned, uneaten fish were rather bloated and slimy now and quite vile-smelling as well. With a shovel and holding her breath, Lucy scooped them up and carried them over to the fire. She liked to keep going nearby. In she tossed some sage and a little rosemary to keep the biting insects away and disguise the smell of the rotting fish burning. She took a seat on one of the massive wooden chairs near the fire and poked at the coals to stir them to action. The fish burnt with stunning flashes of red and blue. Eventually, they crumbled to ash and she sat smoking her long pipe while staring into the flames long into the evening. By morning, Kitty had still not reappeared, and Lucy was starting to think about what Torgon would do if Kitty was still missing when he returned. Shrugging and going back to her task, she at first assumed Kitty was nearby, and she gave the topic very little thought. In the end, the next day, Lucy gathered up a few hides to trade in town. She would take a quick look around in case Kitty had wandered down to the merchants or to check out the fishing vessel. Lucy assumed that Kitty would reappear after whatever curious thing had caught the large feline's attention, was it devoured or became boring. Other than the merchant Richard, who stayed late and haggled with her over the hides but took them in the end at a fair price, she didn't see anyone else out and about in town. She also didn't see her lynx anywhere, and so she climbed steadily back up the mountain to her home before the sun fell. Her days were filled with emptying the overstuffed wagon, chopping wood, and baking. Kitty still didn't come back. Now Lucy was worried. This was not like Kitty. It was time for action. Lucy sent her farmhand Oscar to the village with a scribbled note addressed to her friend Zarina in Jade Gardens, asking for help to find Kitty. Zarina was the best tracker that Lucy knew. There was no telling how far the lynx had traveled, and Lucy was sure that Torgon would not accept that Lucy didn't do anything to find his companion. Lucy was getting a little more anxious about the missing pet, and knew how wide the area was that Kitty could travel in a short time. Maybe Kitty went looking for Torgon. Oh, this was bad. Very, very bad. And Lucy wanted to avoid seeing Torgon lose his temper if she could. Reinforcements were on the way because Lucy trusted Zarina would come help. That calmed her down a little. A few days later, just outside Jade Mountains, on the top of the cliff overlooking the seaport below that connected the West Island with the center island of the Mistura, she stood with her spyglass out. Lucy could see that the seabird's flag was still flapping in the wind down in the pier at the ocean shoreline. The ship had stayed in anchorage for the entire time Lucy had laboriously climbed up from the dock to her small home in the backwoods of Jade Mountains and settled in. It must have been waiting on the passenger, or maybe it had repairs to do. Lucy was sure it would not be there for much longer, though. She wondered if Kitty had gone back to the ship for some reason. This morning was shaping up to be another clear and warm day, and she had much to accomplish before Zarina arrived. Lucy had hardly seen anyone except her farmhand since her return, and a good cup of tea with the locals sounded like a perfect way to catch up with the news while she waited for Zarina, including asking if anyone had seen Kitty wandering around. Maybe someone in the hamlet below had seen Kitty, and she could resupply the farm with her long absence, too. Gossip was the grease of every small holding, and this one was no different. Surely someone would have noticed Kitty's presence. Later in the day, when her chores were done, after she had planned for Oscar to stay on while she was away again, she flipped her hair out of the way after changing to town clothes and hitched up her backpack. Climbing down the mountainside was by far Lucy's favorite walk, no matter the season. Though coming back up left her breathless. Letting her body flow down the mountain felt like skiing down on snow, even though it was early autumn, and she wore boots today instead of skis. Lucy didn't know how far Torkan's pet had wandered in the last week, so this might take a few days of looking. The fire was out, and the colt had several days of feed and a good supply of fresh water. Oscar would check in on it every day and keep the place going for her. He was a reliable farmhand who she enjoyed bossing around. He didn't say much except, "As you wish," and that was a comforting way that Lucy didn't quite understand. Lucy left one final message with Oscar in case Zarina came straight to the farm. This morning in the hamlet. At the outdoor seating area, with the lakeside open to view in front of her, Fiona Thatcher looked across the water and saw an air balloon circling to land upon the central mountain. There would be custom today as explorers came to the lake to hear the stories from the locals about the goings-on in the lake that night years ago. She did nothing to dissuade the rumors, but also had no stories to tell. She had not been in the small hamlet when the event took place, and always suggested that they ask the old wagon drover as he was the one involved. No, he didn't work anymore. He was far older than that. No, he wasn't in town today that she knew of. The answers were automatic. Giving the long countertop an extra hard rub, Fiona gathered up the rag that she was swabbing with and tossed it into the nearby bucket of hot soapy water. She didn't like to clean up after the sloppy sailors who frequented the lakeshore crafting pavilion from the docks nearby, but it was honest work, and she was intent on honoring her parents' memory by continuing to support herself and her little brother Oscar. Upon becoming adults and being released from the orphanage that raised them, Oscar and Fiona chose the farthest point from Old Riverside and Jade Gardens that they could afford to travel, and one where they knew one person. Lucy Featherbright, the avatar who rescued them from certain death when they were far too small to protect themselves, lived here. The hamlet of Jade Mountain suited them just fine, and even the balloon ride here was an exhilarating and stunning experience for the young people who had never been outside the orphanage. There wasn't much of the constant danger from any experience on the open road in a balloon journey either. Though they still learned a valuable lesson about trusting strangers after one of the many stops when someone they thought was a new friend disembarked with some of their few valuables before they noticed they had gone missing. When they first arrived at Jade Mountains, there wasn't much work available for the young brother and sister, but both Oscar and Fiona were sturdy, healthy, and had clear understanding that they needed to earn their keep. With their motivation and their even tempers, they soon both found employment and lodgings. Oscar got work at her farm right away, and Lucy made sure Fiona had employment close to their home for a fair wage. Enough with her tips and his earnings, they managed to keep themselves without any handouts. She could see the small charcoal drawing their parents, before the orphanage when everything changed, commissioned of the two of them hanging behind the counter. Since she spent most of her day here, she kept it with her. It was the only thing she had from the time before. Old Riverside no longer existed, and their parents were gone too. She shook her head and spoke sternly to herself. "No musing, miss. It's looking forward only, remember?" And with that, she started whistling and ran up the few steps to the open-air cooking area. Upstairs in the pavilion was far more sedate and comfortable seating, but the farmers and dock workers around these parts preferred a seat around the campfire overlooking the water, or maybe at the long countertop if they were feeling especially spruced up. She gave the fish stew another stir with her big wooden spoon before starting at the pile of dirty dishes. She was glad to have a job at all, so she stirred the soup and sighed, enjoying the view of the lake in front of her, while she listened to the gossip of the nearby residents sipping their beverages. Catching a flicker of light reflect up the mountain beside the lake, she turned. Shading her eyes with one hand, she set the wooden spoon down near the pot and used the other hand to add to the shade. She could see Lucy Featherbright running full tilt down the mountainside. Even from this distance, Fiona could see that it was her friend. This was a welcome sight. She had heard from Oscar that Lucy disembarked from the Seabird last week when it had arrived at the docks at the seashore below the mountain town. He had been working for one of the taverns near the docks on the seashore on and off too. Even if she wasn't very happy with his choice to spend more time around sailors and pirates, the money he got in tips more than soothed her qualms, and fixed the pail and brought the cotton to make a warmer blanket. Then, a couple of days ago, he had come down from Lucy's farm with a letter that Richard the merchant saw him send with the post. Fiona knew Lucy was brimming with fresh gossip from far away. She smiled and gave a wave. Lucy waved back and continued toward the local merchant, as Fiona knew she would. Jessica and Richard would be glad for the business. Lucy would stop and by and visit with Fiona later. She always came for tea after securing supplies with the merchant. The heavy kettle Fiona swung over the fire would boil before Lucy arrived, and the tea would be piping hot, just like the gossip. A few of the locals wandered into the hamlet's crafting spot after their workday to do repairs, and Fiona served their food and drink with gossip among them while she waited to catch up with her friend. The big bonfire by the lake was a natural place to visit, especially for those who liked being outdoors instead of in an enclosed area. Fiona's attention was diverted by the needs of her scattered patrons, so it didn't seem as if much time had passed at all until Lucy strode over to the fire pit where Fiona stood, handing out ales and stews to a couple of the travelers. Thankfully, Lucy waited until the food and drink were in the hands of the customers before Fiona got one of those big bear hugs Lucy was famous for. Plopping down on an empty, nearby bench, Fiona pulled Lucy down to sit beside her.
"Have you seen my kitty?"
Lucy urgently blurted.
"How's Oscar?"
Fiona asked anxiously at the same time, hoping his cough had subsided.
"Staying up at my farm while I'm gone."
"No, there haven't been any strays here."
"You never asked about Oscar. What's up?"
"Where are you going?"
They both burst out laughing and had just taken a breath in anticipation of enjoying a good catch-up session when one of the sailors got up to leave and made some loud noise or other. Lucy had been looking down at the fire, but when she raised her eyes to see what the noise was that had startled her, past the noisemakers on the pier, she saw Zyrina securing a small boat along the wooden plank walkway stretching across the water. With a bellowed, "Yes!" she jumped up and ran to greet her friend who had rowed up to the shore in a small vessel with neither her nor Fiona noticing.
"You made it!" Lucy grinned.
"Yes, and Lilybird will be joining us, I think. If she got my messages, that is," Zyrina answered after the bear hug that Lucy bestowed upon her. After a quick introduction, Fiona left to fetch a bowl of warm stew and an ale for the newcomer, as she looked both worn out and parched. Then, with a nod to Lucy, Fiona went back to her job serving the next wave of those who were starting to come in for a bowl and a brew, both from the balloon which had finally landed. Generally, she directed those folks upstairs to the comfortable seating there, and the locals, after a day of fishing and logging, who liked to drink and eat in the open near the water and away from the building itself. She threw a promise to sit down as she could take another break over her shoulder as she turned to serve the newcomers. Lucy was talking a mile a minute, and Zyrina was blowing on her still-too-hot meal when I arrived, striding across the wooden pier. Long before one of them looked over towards the boardwalk, I watched them as I got closer. This time, it was Zyrina's turn to yelp in greeting and run to meet me. Then, after the infamous Lucy bear hug, we three old friends gathered by the fire. After Lucy finished her story of gathering supplies for her farm
and since Zarina was still eating and obviously not going to stop, I sat between them and began chatting about my journey here on one of the newfangled air balloons which landed at the higher mountainous area near the lake. Flying through the air was exhilarating, and I only frightened the balloonist a couple of times when my screams got away from me. I felt justified because on most occasions I was able to stifle them and just clenched my hand far too tightly instead. The other passengers appreciated my control. It appeared as if they were both experienced balloon travelers. After my first fright-filled flight to Arena's, I nodded towards her. On this one, I was beginning to believe the fear was fading a little. Air travel truly is a wave of the future, and these balloonists are brilliant. Or maybe my uncle's medicinal rum, which I had had a few large nips from, kicked in. I winked and watched Lucy nearly fall off the bench from laughing. Zarina even chuckled. Regardless, this last trip was far more interesting because I could open my eyes every now and then and take a look around, and far easier on the eardrums. I went on to say that the land and air's arrival and departure point was not near the hamlet of Jade Mountains, but also found out that's the closest to the lake that most of the wagons and the air balloons could venture. My friends could understand my complaints about how far the walk to the settlement was from the top of the departure points, though. At least the balloon crowd knew about the shortcut, which was the wooden plank dock across the lake that cut the journey's length considerably. I simply followed the crowd for a while until I spotted you both here by the fire. The pilots wouldn't talk about it either. They just gave a nervous little laugh. But that just made me a little more determined to find out why so many wouldn't come closer. My frustration was obvious. There's a story in there somewhere, and I'm going to find out what it is. I'm not called Sticky Beak for nothing. Here, Lucy and Fiona exchanged a private look between them, and they both had huge grins that they tried to hide. Fiona finished gathering our empties and took my order for another round and a stew. The air balloon had touched down just barely long enough to toss the baggage out and lift me and the others over the edge of the railing. Then they were airborne again, the pilot looking around nervously the whole while. Shrugging, Zarina threw in, "Seems like something spooked them in the past?" Lucy nodded in agreement with a neutral expression. Whatever the fear of the youngish balloon pilot, I harbored no such qualms. The mountains shone after the rains and the smells were vivid. It was a longish walk down here, but it had refreshed me. Most of the local traffic was not by wagon but by foot, sometimes a small wheelbarrow that people pushed or pulled. So I had lots of company as I walked down the path. None of them would talk about why the arrival point was so far from the hamlet, and gave me a wide berth if I pressed them. But here I am, arrived finally, I reported satisfied. The pretty server who Lucy introduced as Fiona Thatcher placed a steaming bowl of stew in front of me with a thick cut of dark bread and handed me a mug of ale. With a grateful smile, I took the meal from Fiona and set gold coins on her tray for her kindness, before she rushed off to clean up the mess near the counter. The foul mood I had nursed all the way down the mountain across the lake could not withstand the joyful reunion of my adventurous companions, nor the scent of Fiona's stew. Then, as I became distracted from describing the joys and woes of balloon travel, I gave a sigh, picked up my bowl, and stuck my legs out in front of me with a weary look. "Okay, what's this about Kitty? Where's Torgun? What's Fleavus doing these days? I'm ready for the adventure to begin, but I have no idea what's going on. Spill!" As Zarina and I tucked into our stew, in her indirect and wandering way, Lucy began again telling the story of the missing snow lynx. She was anxious that we understood that this was not typical behavior of the cat. Kitty didn't do this. She didn't run away. Something was up. Lucy could feel it in her bones. We need to find Kitty, she stuttered shyly after the long speech. Zyrina and I exchanged a meaningful look. Lucy's bones were always right. Well, Lucy, I guess we need to find that lynx, I agreed. Turning to my somber tracking friend, I asked, Rena, do you have any idea where to start? What direction Kitty might have gone? Zyrina gave me a patient look and decided to shrug. Lucy kept hoping that she would see Kitty sauntering up with a large fish grasped in her powerful jaws, and she was still searching the area thoughtfully. Even as we sat and talked, she twisted and turned to see in all directions. So, as she nodded in agreement with my words, she also turned hopefully towards Zyrina. Behind Zyrina, I could see Fiona walking up with a full tray in her arms, paused mid-stride after hearing our chatter and turned to face us. I nearly forgot, Fiona interrupted sheepishly. I think I know where your lynx has gone, Lucy. She started handing out the mugs. We all turned as one to stare at Fiona, who now was extremely uncomfortable under the intense gaze of so many faces. I didn't realize the kitty you were asking about earlier was a snowy lynx. She shifted the tray and began the tale. As you know, Lucy, Oscar was working down at the sea docks last week when your ship arrived, and he says after you disembarked with your wagon and headed up here to your farm, and the seabird made the arrangements for repairs and planned to stay on and gathering supplies and trading with the locals down at the sea docks for a week or so. When they were finally ready to depart this morning, and just before she sailed, one of the locals who was down on the dock working said he saw a large snowy lynx that had walked up the gangplank and jumped onto the seabird after Pursuer had an altercation with a mage dressed in a black obsidian robes, who was finally allowed on board. He heard Captain Violent order her crew to ignore the lynx. Then she sent a note over here in case anyone asked about the large snowy lynx. I didn't know that was the kitty you were talking about before. It's on the bar over here. She gestured with a nod of her head to the countertop behind her. Zyrina got up and headed over to pick up the paper. That's my sister's ship, she exclaimed. Captain Violet Green. And? Lucy couldn't wait anymore and blurted out. Do you know where the seabird's next port of call might be? While tugging on my sleeve. I shook my head, but Fiona nodded quickly. Indeed, she is heading for Iron Hall. After a pause, she added, You could ask Finn Bienna in Iron Hall. He'd know where she docks, I bet. He's someone Oscar met while working at the docks before he got farm work. Finn will either be at the dock or perhaps one of the inns called the Broken Dock. I think the small community called Lake Town nearby Iron Hall. Go up to the central area here in Jade Mountain, and you'll find a wagon up by the town crier that will take you to the ship that goes to Iron Hall. When you get to Iron Hall, then find Lake Town. She nodded her head in the direction that I had arrived, up where your balloon landed. Invite Finn for supper with Oscar and me next time he comes this way. Likely he will like that. Like me, he watches who comes and goes in his village, and he'll want to hear why you came by. Gossip is his trade. Glancing at the note left on the bar, Zyrina nodded in agreement. Yup, she added. It says Captain Violet recognized Kitty from your trip here and expects you to collect her from the ship the next time she's back near Jade Mountain. Wailing. I'm not waiting that long. I don't know when they'll be back. We need to go find them. Lucy lurched over Fiona, and she gave her friend a big hug. You just saved us a lot of trouble, Fiona. I think that calls for another round, don't you? Fiona's eyes smiled. Coming right up! After delivering her tray of drinks to the table upstairs, she moved smoothly behind the bar and started pulling a fresh jug of ale for the group. Turning back to the fire and speaking quietly, Lily leaned toward her friend. So, Rena, spill. I can see something is bothering you, and Lucy can see it too. Where's Torgon? Why is Kitty not with him? Zyrina leaned in closer to the group on the bench and took a deep breath.
Okay, don't get mad, Lucy, but Torgon has gone after another rumor. Lucy blanched.
What? Alone?
No, with Phlebas. Zarina shook her head quickly and then took a deep breath. After we arrived in central Brittany, Torgon left me at Bird's boarding house and continued over to Phlebas' favorite library at the castle. All this time, Phlebas had been looking for information about that little book you all found, Lily. During his search, he asked the older librarians in central Brittany if they had heard about such a book of magic in the past. Only one old librarian knew of it, and after getting to know Phlebas a little, he shared that he had spoken last year with a stranger who appeared to have had some very intimate knowledge about the contents of the book. Phlebas said it was rumored to have an unknown spell of great significance involving the essence of life itself. It had gone missing during the fall as far as he had been aware. The old librarian himself had not seen it, and even he had hoped it would never be found. He explained that there was always more danger in such magic if used with the wrong intent. Phlebas didn't get much more information than that about the book. And he didn't pass along his own discoveries because the old Biblionov didn't seem like he wanted to know much about the present. But he did ask after the stranger who had been inquiring the year before, and had been told by the librarian that the scholar had stayed with a bard in the central Brittany. He remembered because they had a long chat about a lute and strings and musical scores that had been purchased at Scrota's shop. That's where Torgon and I went next. We were spellbound. Zarina swallowed a gulp of ale, then continued in the same low voice. There was little at Scrota's that had anything to do with the book, but a scrap of paper with the words stolen from us, and then some unreadable smudges, and then the dragon's breath near Jade Valley scribbled on it. And this. 5-4-3-2-R. I took the scrap of paper from her and studied it. I couldn't think what the numbers meant, only that it might be a combination for a lock or chest or something. I handed it to Lucy to look over. Zarina took a breath and continued. Of course, we had to go and try to find River's Cross near Jade Valley and see what we could learn there. After finding our way through the fog, which is the only time River Cross appears, out of the mists, if it appears at all, we found a town burned to the ground and only one building still standing, the Dragon's Breath Inn. We did find a lone bartender and sat for a pint and an earful. We talked for a whole evening and eventually learned the tale. River's Cross is the last known location of the book. She paused before warning, "It's gruesome." She looked over at Lucy, whose tender heart was well known and who appeared to shudder a little. You remember there was a group of mages who stole that artifact from Emrys while he was trying to deliver it to Lord British after the adventure Lilybird told us about? While she was trying to rescue her friend Arabella during the Treasure of Mystery Island? Lucy looked confused and shocked, but shook her head slowly, looking apprehensive. With a look of surprise, Zarina went on, "You don't? Well, Lily can tell you that part later. I heard the whole story from Emery when we were asking him about what you found in the treasure chest. It was a small leather-bound book of magic. An artifact from before the fall. Someone ambushed Emery and took the book from him before he could return it to the library in central Brittany. At least he survived the beating he was given. We lost the trail there." She nodded at Lucy, then over at me. "Then remember we found out a group of mages in that hidden temple under Jade Valley had been using a book of magic to build their temple out of people they had turned to stone in the Stone Dragon? And we interpreted their attempt to turn a human into a dragon?" I nodded, rapt. She went on. "We each know that ending.
At least one of those mages escaped with the book just minutes before we could capture the survivors. It turns out that one was not alone, and the escaped mages fled to the sleepy little hamlet called River's Cross that used to be across the covered bridge near Jade Valley. That's where the Dragon's Breath is located. They convinced the locals that they were a peace-loving group of magic workers just waiting to make their mark in the Novia, and meanwhile would treat the locals when they were sick. The mages were welcomed into the community just as many of them started to fall sick and needed attention from the mages. At first, the mages healed the small scrapes and cuts that were presented with, and that's all they did. But then folks slowly started disappearing one by one until the hamlet was nearly empty. Lucy squeaked and covered her eyes as if that could stop her from hearing Rena's story. Zyrena paused, but then went on. At that point, one night, all the mages rose up out of their temple underground and into Dragon's Breath Inn for a celebration. The bartender at the Dragon's Breath heard things that both shocked and frightened him that night, but he stoically continued to serve the drunken bunch of mages without giving away his dismay. Their kodos were just as valuable as the next person's gold in his view. That view changed. During all that drinking, those mages did a lot of bragging. The bartender took his time telling of all the things they bragged about, but I'll summarize it for now and tell you the whole tale later. The group of mages had been killing villagers one by one and used their human essence and a spell to brew the ale that they thought would extend their lifespan. That night, they started tasting their own mix of kegs that they had brewed from the villagers. It made them feel euphoric. They believed they had succeeded and were proud of it too. However, most of the villagers were now missing, and the remaining few had started whispering among themselves about the mages. The mages were making plans to go to another hamlet and start making another batch of the vile drink. It seemed they believed they had extended their lives and were arguing whether they could expend them even further, and eventually they started to dare each other to do spells from a little leather-bound book they left on the table while they were playing their drunken games. That night, they got excessively drunk. Too drunk to spellcast responsibly, let alone spellcasting from that book. Fiona had silently moved closer with a tray of drinks, and she handed another ale to Zyrena. She took a sip from the fresh ale before resuming. Blind drunk, while arguing and bragging about their prowess, some of them foolishly conjured one of those spirit dragons from the dragon bone they had dragged up out of their lair, and the spell they tried to interpret from the little book. This time, they were far too successful. As soon as the spell was cast, the bone burst into flame and then grew before their very eyes into a flaming sphere of a full-size flying dragon. Before anyone could properly end the spell, or even before they realized what they had achieved, the shadowy dragon raised nearly the entire village. Lucy seemed to be properly horrified. Like the one we saw nearly materialize in the graveyard in Jade Valley? Zyrena nodded and saw me start to squirm a little from trying to sit still during her long speech as she continued. The important part is this. The bartender saw one mage who hung back and didn't join the others. A quiet one who kept to himself and didn't drink. During the ruckus, after the spell was cast, he picked up the book when the other mages were concentrating about the newly appeared dragon before the bartender escaped to his hiding hole. The quiet mage grabbed the book and hid it in one of his cloak pockets, then quickly faded into the background after putting some kind of protection spell on the dragon's breath. But before he disappeared, a piece of paper dropped out of the little book that the mage didn't notice, and the bartender picked it up before he fled into his basement to hide. The bartender missed seeing the brave farmers who came to help fight off the attack, and the avatars from as far away as Jade Valley that came to help because he hid in his basement as anyone would do. In the end, the dragon was overcome, but not until the mages who had cast the spell were dead and the hamlet destroyed. The bartender gave the paper to Torgun, who brought it to me. Zyrina went silent for a moment before looking directly at Lucy. Torgun has gone after the mage. He returned to the libraries of Central Brittany to find Phlebas, and together they were looking all over Novia to hear of whispers and rumors of strange magic. Then, after last winter, he left me a message saying he had found something, and they were both heading out to Spindleskog to track the mage, who they were now positive had the book when he left River's Cross. In the quiet, while we took a minute to grasp what she was saying, she added, "Here's a copy of the paper the mage had dropped." She handed it to me. It had the same series of numbers on it that was left at Scrota's, but a different letter. 5-4-3-2-C. "Alone?" Lucy's voice was shaky as she took the paper from me after I glanced at it. "To Spindleskog?" Zyrina nodded. "I couldn't stop him, Lucy. So I wrote Lilybird and asked her to come meet me. I knew we would need help to catch up to him, and I knew you would want to know what Torgun was getting into as well. I'm glad Lily caught up before we left again. I don't know if Torgun can manage on his own with just Phlebas against a group of rogue mages with the magic book. I know we will have to find him, but let's find Kitty first, okay? I have a feeling Kitty knows exactly where she's going, and maybe that's where Torgun will be." Lucy sighed and nodded. She was left looking at the scrap of paper and comparing it with the other one. It was the same script, and the same numbers matched, but what was the R and the C? What were the numbers for? A combination? An address in Novia? We were all stumped. Just then, Fiona arrived back from the fire pit with another full tray of frothy ale and wine in large mugs and some crunchy salty bits of fried potato. As the talk changed back to things of local interest, gossip and tidbits of news from the world outside, the small mountain hamlet that didn't include shadowy mages with magic artifact books. During the merriment, we came to an agreement. Tomorrow we would journey. We made our plan to take a covered wagon from up the central transportation area to find a ship to Ironhall. Fiona gave us detailed descriptions of how to find Ironhall that included catching a covered wagon from here to the West Island docks, taking the ferry to the Middle Island dock, and from there finding passage to Norreach, Mud, Esgard, and finally Ironhall in the far northwest of Norgard. It would only be a few days' travel if we were lucky. Lucy tried saying West Island and Middle Island fast 5 times, and that started us giggling. I fell over laughing. Tonight, we would laugh and dance around the fire and sing with Fiona until the dark forced Fiona to abandon us and go start her own home fire so that her little brother Oscar would have a warm meal when he finally arrived home up from the mountains. Fiona thought Oscar would have his work cut out for him taking care of their own garden and caring for Lucy's place since Lucy was obviously leaving again. Lucy always made sure that Oscar was well paid for his efforts, and Oscar preferred to work for Lucy's farm above all others. Fiona appreciated Oscar being away from the docks, and especially the lessons Oscar was learning from Lucy when she had time to teach him about the plants along the mountainside and their medicinal uses. The extra effort to take care of both places would be a strain on Oscar. Maybe she would advise him to stay up the mountain, and she would handle the garden herself. Smiling, Fiona gave a wave and wished Lucy and her new friends the luck of the Titans, not knowing why they traveled, only that under the gaiety, concerns from some unnamed danger was giving them each a grim look in the corners of their eyes and a thoughtful quietness underneath their frantic merriment. She hoped Lucy would return soon and tell her the whole tale, but she could see that none of them were willing to talk about it tonight. She could hear them still singing around the campfire by the lakeside as she waltzed all the way to her little home just down the lane.